Hello and welcome to So You Think You Can Fanon. Please check the link tree in the description and see all of our beautiful, lovely, salacious links to listen to more. Thank you.
May thy blade chip and shatter.
May thy blade chip and shatter.
Sorry. I can't even stay in character. That was ridiculous.
I was in character. That was very in character. What's your problem?
I just can't take it.
That's not the quote.
Isn't that the quote?
Yeah. I don't care.
May my blade chip and chatter. Gooning.
I hope you're cock.
More like dooning, am I right?
we're talking about goon today, right?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, Goon Messiah.
Session of Goon.
The Hunters of Goon.
Children of Goon.
Oh, no. We don't do that one.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the book club. Today, we're going to be covering 1965's novel, epic science fiction novel by American author Frank Herbert.
Frank Herbert.
Dune.
Yes.
Apparently, Dune. Okay, so I'm gonna start it. I'll whip it out. I'll whip out the author conversation. Frank Herbert, old guy, author,
mm-hmm.
writer. Dare I even say?
Nope. Yes.
Had a couple of books written before. Before he published Dune. Dune was published in two parts originally. Two separate serials in 1963 and 1965. In a magazine called Analog Magazine. The original publisher for the book Dune was a company called Chilton Company, which published automotive manuals. Which is kind of funny. Apparently, Herbert had a lot of trouble getting Dune published, and that was kind of his only way to get it out there, which he did, which is cool.
I also want to add, because obviously none of us are around for this, and I'm sure a good chunk of our audience wasn't either, but because, you know, you mentioned that it was released in a magazine. The only way, like if you wanted to read genre fiction, especially like sci-fi, you would have to like subscribe to these like monthly like sci-fi magazines, and that's where you get your shit. A lot of like the big famous sci-fi novels started out in these magazines before eventually being published into books.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of things, like, if I remember correctly, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep was also published in a magazine, which later led into Blade Runner.
Interesting.
Learning a lot today.
I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that's true. That's why so many famous like fantasy and sci-fi books are like start out as like novellas, because they were just like collected from magazines or just like a one shot that turned into something bigger. So Frank Herbert started writing Dune in 1959. He was inspired by things like Lawrence of Arabia. He said he drew inspiration from Native American mentors, stuff like that.
I found out one particular thing I'll add on there, if you'll let me, Jacob.
What is it?
He was particularly inspired by an incident, two incidents, of a real desert experiment by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and from a single conversation with a friend from the Quileute tribe, whose mm-hmm. lands were being destroyed due to excessive logging.
Mm-hmm.
And also about a study on desert encroachment in the state of Oregon. So we have the U.S. government to thank for.
Oh, also the JFK assassination and Nixon's presidency too.
Yes, but also most importantly, Frank Herbert thanks his usage of psilocybin for inspiration on Dune. which tells me that Frank went into the desert, dropped shrooms, and went, fuck.
I should write that water of life.
I should write a fucking book about this. Much of the quote from mycologist Paul Stamets' account of meeting Herbert, Frank went on to tell me that much of the premise of Dune, the magic spice that allowed the bending of space, the giant sandworms, the eyes of the Fremen, the mysticism of the female spiritual warriors, the Bene Gesserits, influenced by the tales of Maria Sabina and the sacred mushroom cults of Mexico, came from his perception of the fungal life cycle. His imagination was stimulated through his experience of the use of magic mushrooms.
Yeah.
I like that it is a theme that, like, when authors are just like, dude, I wish to write something that's just, like, kind of out there, but, like, I could reel it back a little bit. It's just, I'm going to do hard drugs. And then we'll see what happens.
Shrooms are like medium drugs at worst.
I'll do drugs, period.
was Tolkien on drugs? Or was that just war trauma?
From what I remember, Tolkien was just like, The Hobbit started as like him telling bedtime stories to his kids. That's how I remember
that. That's what I've heard. It's a lot more wholesome.
So it was just war trauma. I get it.
Yes, it was just war trauma.
Yeah. Also, I guess I can also add on to inspirations, because I currently have the Word of Brian Herbert open with me.
A tertiary source.
Yes. He says that when Frank was 8, his dad's Irish Catholic aunt tried to force Catholicism on him, and he resisted, and this became the genesis of the Bene Gesserit.
I don't believe that, because we just got a direct quote that he was influenced by other things.
He also says that Greek mythology and other mythological bases based that went into Dune, like the Greek House Atreus, which is what House Atreides is based off of.
That part I believe.
He also mentions he asked if his dad identified with any of the characters in the book, and his dad actually said Stilgar. And apparently Stilgar is based off of a Native American that Frank knew when he was a kid named Henry, who was banished from his tribe and taught Frank a variety of things, including fishing, the identification of edible and medicinal plants in the forest, how to find red ants, and protein rich grub worm for food.
Interesting. Also, something that Sergio brought up that I agree. Well, I guess that should be restated, is there was an interview with Frank. I almost said Frank Miller on Instinct, where that's the Batman guy. Frank Herbert said that Paul was a major influence on Paul was John F. Kennedy.
Interesting.
And that's because much like Paul. In Frank Herbert's perspective, JFK was a bad guy because he doesn't believe that charismatic leaders are capable of being good guys. And he went on to say that he thinks the best politician of all time was Richard Nixon, because Richard Nixon was at least upfront about being a piece of shit.
Oh, God. That's an interesting take.
A big point of contention between Dune fans, I guess, Dune fans and Tolkien fans, is the perspectives of the authors. Because Frank Herbert is much more of a cynical person compared to Tolkien. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Tolkien didn't like Dune when he read it.
And I think that's because he's a chud.
I mean, you don't like Lord of the Rings, so fuck you.
I think you can tell the perspectives immediately while reading.
Apparently, Tolkien thought it was too cynical, and the ending is kind of depressing. If you interpret it correctly, which a lot of people didn't, so Frank was so mad that he wrote a second book.
Yeah, Brian also mentions that in here, that nobody got it, so he wrote Dune Messiah.
Mm-hmm. I think Dune and Lord of the Rings may be equally important in the history of modern fiction. But I can definitely see where the tension would lie. I'm more on the Dune side than the Lord of the Rings side, mostly because Lord of the Rings, it's really well written, but it does a lot of fucking meandering.
Yes.
Which is interesting, at least for me, because I much prefer, I generally prefer fantasy over sci-fi, but I much prefer Dune over Lord of the Rings, because it gets to its point faster.
I think Lord of the Rings, for what it's worth, probably has more influence just because things like D&D spawned out of it.
Oh, for sure.
People consume with wild abandon. Meanwhile, Dune has like a few board games and things like that.
I mean, Dune is like the
Star Wars, yeah, Warhammer 40,000.
Come on, man. Have you seen like Billy and Mandy?
Warhammer definitely.
There's like a whole episode dedicated to just parroting Dune.
That's true.
Yeah, but like those are very transformative. Whereas D&D, like you can just make Bilbo inside of D&D.
Yeah,
just
straight up. They're halflings.
If I remember correctly, the Tolkien estate threatened to sue Gary Gygax for calling halflings hobbits, so yes. he changed them to halflings.
Mm-hmm. D&D just is Lord of the Rings, but you know, Dune definitely has inspired a lot of stuff. But I think people are much more fine with wholesale ripping out of Lord of the Rings. Is my point.
Yeah, I think the big thing of Star Wars is a lot more influenced. Which I should have watched the documentary before this episode, but it just didn't cross my mind. I wanted to watch the Jodorowsky's Dune. A documentary about the original idea for a Dune film was apparently the biggest influence for Lucas and Star Wars, more than the book. Mm-hmm. Not to say that the book wasn't an influence, because obviously if you are a Star Wars fan and you've ever seen the prequels, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Anakin is kind of just Paul, except with a different backstory.
Also, from that movie, we got Alien and Blade Runner, basically. Yes.
Among other things.
I have a good video to show you later, remind me, about plagiarism. And they mentioned the original Star Wars a lot in that video.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the moisture farming on Tatooine is like spice farming. Yeah. Anakin being the chosen one that kind of turns out to be not a great guy.
The spice mines of Kessel.
One last thing I'll say before we get in the origins of Dune. We actually do have Brian Herbert to thank for a core part of the narrative.
No, we don't.
Which is, it was originally going to be set on Mars. And Brian told his dad, people have read so much about Mars.
Someone's mic is buzzing. Is that Matt?
No, it's not mine.
Do you hear it?
I can hear it. I don't know what the fuck is going
on. Yeah, I also hear it.
I think
someone's taking a whole lot of spice right now.
You're taking too much melange, Kai.
I don't even know what would be making that noise. I'm not doing anything.
Check the cord.
Weird.
Looks fine to me.
Yeah, well,
it stopped. It's fine. Okay, so. It occurred to me that for context for listeners, we recorded the Sky Pilgrim episode yesterday, and we just like forgot to summarize the plot. So would somebody like to summarize the plot of Dune?
I would.
Go for it.
Go ahead.
Okay, so family moves to desert planet to make more money. Kidding. That is a part of it.
I mean, that is kind of the opening.
All right, so there's this planet called Caladan. It's this like pretty cool, like kind of like ocean world with a castle like overlooking a cliff.
Kind of like Earth.
Little like Earth. And there's this family, the House Atreides, that live there. There's their Duke Oscar Isaac, Duke Leto, his concubine slash wife, Lady Jessica, who's a Bene Gesserit, which can be best described as a gaslighting, gatekeeping girl boss, and their son Paul, and the Emperor of the Universe, because so there's like an Imperium of Man led by the Padishah Emperor, and there's these great houses that like make up like a grand council, and he's like, listen, these guys, the Harkonnens, they're smelly, they're bald, they're pale, They've been running the spice operations on Arrakis, which is the super desert. And spice is this drug that this is how you know that Frank Herbert loves psilocybin, is that spice is like the only like drug / psychedelic I've seen in fiction that has like no negative properties. It makes you younger. It unlocks your third eye. It's just great. And it helps you space travel. So it's the most important powder in the galaxy. So he's like, all right, Harkonnens, smelly. I want you to take over for the Harkonnens, set up shop, and mine spice better. And the Atreides are the good guys. They're like, all right, we're not going to press anybody. We're going to make some friends. We're going to harness some desert power, which may or may not involve air power, but I'll let you know on that. However, this is a trap, and the Harkonnens are planning on taking the planet back, and the book is about Paul's journey to grow into the Messiah that he has been groomed for, and his struggle with whether or not he should go along with this future that he has been, the prophecy that he has been put a part of that has been brewing for hundreds of years.
Yes. Also, before I forget to bring this up, because I do want to bring this up in the episode, Dune, one thing that I find interesting about Dune, personally, is a lot of the, like, quote-unquote alien language used in Dune is just, like, other real languages. Mm-hmm. Like, melange is a French word. Quisatzhatarok is Hebrew.
Yes.
There's yep. French, there's Hebrew, there's German. The biggest influence, obviously, being Arabic. Pretty much all of the Fremen words are Arabic. Bene Gesserit is Arabic. Apparently means sons of the peninsula in Arabic, which is cool.
Yes. Brian says that he pulled from Navajo, Latin, Chukopsa, which is a language found in the Caucasus Mountains, the Nahuatl dialect of the Aztecs, Greek, Persian, East Indian, Russian, Turkish, Finnish, Old English, and of course, Arabic.
Mm-hmm. Like Fadaiken, the word Fadaiken, which is the like the Fremen commandos, it was a term used in the 60s for Palestinian guerrillas. Gom Jabbar is, let's see, Jabbar could be a variation of Jabbar, which in Arabic means mighty or powerful, and the form Al Jabbar is a name of God. So yeah, there's a big influence of Arabic language mostly, on Dune, which, if you've seen the movie, you may have noticed isn't really there. Which is interesting, but I mean, I feel like that's just because it's like, like the American culture view of Arabic in the modern day is very different than it was 70 years ago, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's very interesting. I think it's a bummer that they kind of removed it in the movie, but
I think they didn't want people talking about the next big jihad like every other scene.
Yeah, so I'm just, what I'm hearing is I should blame Bush, so that's what I'm gonna do.
Frank would blame Bush too.
Yes, which is how I know that I'm right. But yeah, that's very
The war in the Middle East would have definitely changed Dune.
I mean, it did. They removed all of the influence of Middle Eastern culture on Dune in the movie. I mean,
if it was originally written after the war in the Middle East.
Oh.
That would have
I mean, depending on Frank's viewpoint on that war, it probably wouldn't have.
I mean he didn't really like what the US government was doing to the natives, but he still included that in Dune. I think that's my point. Anyways. Anything else we should cover before we answer the rest of the questions?
I don't think so. Is there anything else we need to add past that?
I guess there's one more anecdote that I did find on the creation of Dune from a interview with a friend of Frank, another author friend. I don't remember his name. It was like Norman something.
Norman Reedus.
He did mention, because he had a conversation with Frank. Norman Spinrad. That apparently Dune Messiah and Children of Dune were going to be one big novel. But publishers really like trilogies.
I could tell.
And this is a rumor, but apparently the ending to Dune Messiah was edited by someone else, or someone else convinced Frank to edit it to make it more open to a sequel. And apparently the reason why we keep having, why there is even more Dune books in the first place, is that Frank enjoyed money and the publishers kept throwing massive checks to write more Dune novels. So he kept writing them. And apparently he was like right after like Chapter House, the sixth book was written. He was like, Frank, when are you going to stop writing this royalist nonsense? And he's like, don't worry. When I write Dune 7, the galaxy is going to transition over to a democracy. And then he passed away. And Norman mentions, you know, I read Brian's sequels, and that doesn't happen at the last Dune book.
Suspicious.
Yeah. You can really tell. It's because I started Messiah. And you can tell that Messiah just feels like an act four of, because first of all, it's like way shorter than Dune. Yeah, because Dune's like 900 pages and Messiah is 250.
Oh, yeah, wow. I have the Dune Saga book set that has the first trilogy, and yeah, Dune Messiah is this tiny book sandwiched in between the massive Dune text, and Children of Dune is also pretty weighty.
Children of Dune is still half the length of Dune, though.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dune is like three books.
Without giving away the ending, because we're in the spoiler-free section, the book, the Dune just kind of ends.
Yep.
It's very abrupt.
Even more than the movie does.
The movie does. I think the movie makes it feel more like an ending. But in the book, it literally is just like the climax happens. Like the major thing that everything's been leading up to happens. And then Paul's like, it happened. Good job, guys. And then the book ends.
And then he looks towards the woman he loves and says, I love you. And then literally.
Oh, my God. Right.
Yeah, he turns into the count for a little bit and just goes, oh, I love you.
But yeah, no, you can really, really tell that Messiah is just act four, or book four, whatever you want to call it. Because in Dune, they're called, instead of acts, they're called books. It's book one, two, and three. And Messiah feels like book four. And I'm assuming Children will feel like book five. /6 if there's two books to that one. Yeah, why don't we get into the actual discussion questions now that we're done duning it up.
Did y'all like it?
No.
Absolutely.
I loved it.
I did not.
Really?
Damn.
Yeah, I didn't. I have to say it's like it's a heavy asterisk on the book that I didn't like it, because I like the concepts of Dune. I like the world building of Dune. It's just, I don't think that Frank Herbert's a good storyteller. I think that everything surrounding the way that the narrative is delivered is amazing and it's really cool. But the story is told in this very clunky and inorganic way. And the movie fixed that issue for me. So I've gone from being like, I don't like Dune the book, to being like, nah, Dune's pretty cool.
I just don't disagree. I don't know if I agree. There were definitely some points where I was like, okay, this is just kind of like, sometimes in the book, things just kind of happen. Yes. And instead of it being organic, it's just like a character is just like, this is happening now. Like there is at the end of book one, there's a very important scene where Paul is talking to Jessica and he's just like, I am this thing.
Yeah,
and then that's just what happens. Like, he's like, yeah, this is I am this. And they don't really hint to it beforehand. And he's just like, oh, I have
a thought on that I'll cover more in the themes. May I share it now, though?
Sure.
There is an overwhelming sense, in my view of the book, of shit is completely out of control and a destiny that nobody can see. And a lot of those moments happen in the book, and I did initially find them weird.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on, I realized, oh my god, everybody has scenes like that, and it's because nobody knows what
the fuck's going on.
They don't know what the fuck's going on. They thought they did. Especially
even the Bene Gesserit who planned everything are like, dude, what is happening?
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that later, but that's definitely something I thought.
Yeah, I know the book is meant to be boring, like it's not meant to be this super exciting story.
Mm-hmm.
But as somebody who really likes plot and likes a good, cleverly told plot, and I don't mind sort of meandering every now and then, like a good filler episode's fine. I think that it was just written in a way that they're like, no, we can't have tension in this political intrigue story. No, we can't have that. We can't have any of that.
That is true. And, I did bring this up to Kai.
Mm-hmm. But I like, it's weird because like, it's like, oh, do I just not like the politics? No, those were some of my favorite scenes. I really like the political intrigue. Like every single scene with the Harkonnens, specifically with the Baron, was genuinely interesting and keeping my attention. I part of me is just like, I'm wondering if it's like I just didn't like Paul. Like if I just didn't like listening to Paul's story. But I don't know, because like I watched the movie, I'm just sitting there going like,
so here's the thing.
No, I need to let me back it up real quick. It's not that I'm a Harkonnen stan. I just think that I think it's just the story being told is just told in a very clunky way, because I watched the movie and I'm just like, damn,
I agree.
Paul's going through some shit.
I do agree with that. Absolutely. And you know what? This is a little bit, I'm going to skip ahead for just a second before we go back to this, but I think that Paul might be my least favorite character in Dune.
Well, I think he's meant to be.
he absolutely is meant to be, because he's
the point is like, yeah,
even Frank is like
charismatic leaders. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, he's
Paul,
not meant to be likable.
Paul will constantly go back on his word and just be a piece of shit. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah, baby, yeah.
Paul Atreides agreed to this, but Muad'Dib did not.
At least...
True.
Yeah, exactly. True. And at least in the movie, like, without giving too much away from the movie, because I'm sure we're going to talk about it in spoilers, but they do something with that that makes it way more interesting in the movie.
Yeah, I just, like, for me, it's... I think Dune is a good book.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my god, that was like, that 21 hour audiobook felt like it was twice the length it should have been. It was way too long.
See,
I can agree with this, and I have thoughts on what makes it clunky, but if someone else wants to go first.
Yeah,
I don't want to give the excuse of like, oh, it's an old book, because Romeo and Juliet has better pacing than Dune.
Well, really, Romeo and Juliet isn't a book, it's a play.
I don't give a shit. It has better pacing than Dune.
Well, yeah, because it's a play. It's too late. It has to get its story done in 2 hours.
I don't know what...
It's exactly like saying the movie of Dune has better pacing. Like
it does. It does have better pacing.
But it's because
it does have better pacing.
It's because it's abridged from the original material. That's the big thing.
I need an example here. I need an old book that I'm aware of that I can point to and be like, no, it's not an old book thing. It's just that this person... Frank Herbert is not a very good storyteller.
Since you can't find one, maybe it does mean it's just an old book thing.
No, because I've read... What year did... I read 1984.
Okay, 1984 has great
pacing. And that came out in 1949, and that's one of the best paced books I've ever read.
Yeah, I think it, like, because to me, literature is one of those things that's timeless.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can look back at it and be like, ah, yeah, I remember this sort of... Like, you can see the viewpoints of the era, but like, every single book is meant to be read in some way, shape, or form, regardless of when you read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So for me, it's just like...
I have thoughts on it's not actually just an old book thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's what I think makes it badly... Well, not badly paced, but just it's off in a lot of points. I think one of the main things is that Frank Herbert
was doing too many shrooms.
Maybe. No, he internalizes too many things in the narrative. So like there's points in time where like you could be figuring something out in a different way, but because he writes in third person omniscient perspective, since you hear all of the characters' thoughts in a given situation, it gets kind of bogged down in hearing every single possible perspective.
Yeah,
of what's going on. Rendering.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody has attempted to twist his nipple, and then you immediately cut to the other person's thoughts, and it's like, I'm going to twist Mondeeb's nipple to the right by 45 degrees.
Yeah. I will say, on the defense of the omniscient perspective, I don't know if it's intended to be funny, but it's really, really funny. There's a point in very early, like chapter like 2 or 3. I don't even think that they either just got to Arrakis. Almost called it Dune because they call it Dune in
Well, it is called Dune.
It is.
It's a feminine name.
Yes. It's either they just get to Dune or they haven't left Caladan yet. But there's a point where a character is introduced. For people who haven't seen the first movie, there's a big traitor plot point. There's a traitor in the house, Atreides, and we don't know who it is. And in the movie, it's like a mystery. But in the book, the traitor shows up on screen for the first time, and there is a prelude to the chapter that's written after the fact by Princess Irulan, daughter of the Emperor Shaddam IV, where she is like, oh yes, the traitor. Once known to have betrayed and helped with the death of this character. I remember at one point him thinking to himself and him speaking out loud and saying, man, I really wish I weren't the traitor, but I just have to be the traitor because I am the traitor. And I saw the movie and then I saw part one, I read the book, and then I saw part two. So I had I had a notion of the traitor plot point, and then I get to it in the book. I was driving to work and I was like,
wait, hold on. I need to rewind that.
Yeah, there was. It was so funny because I was like listening. I was like playing Minecraft, just doing a little cobble modding, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had the audiobook going on, and it's like, back when the stars were different colors, this literal character decided to betray the entire family. And then, like, you get into the chapter, and it's like, man, I really wish I couldn't do this.
If they don't know I'm the traitor, then Jessica's like, I think I know who the traitor is. It's this other guy.
God forbid we have a mystery in the political intrigue story.
But it's almost like,
it's comedic.
I think it almost makes it better because the fact that everyone, like, nobody knows except for literally you, and you're just seeing all of the other characters like blunder everything as a result makes it so much better.
Like
I think it's not a political intrigue plot. It's a political thriller plot.
Mm-hmm. It's not a political thriller because thrillers at least also have tension. There's no tension here. There is no tension.
That's what makes it rock.
No. There is tension because you know everybody has it wrong. So you they don't know.
Yeah, you're watching everything unfold in exactly the incorrect way. And it's like, oh my God, you people.
I don't.
Mm-hmm. It's dramatic irony, like textbook dramatic irony.
I wish there was. Well, this is definitely a spoiler discussion moment, but like that, the part wherein like it all comes to fruition for the traitor is like genuine. Like that was the first time I was like, oh shit, something's actually happening in the book.
And then what's funniest is that the reason that he betrayed them, like he's like, oh, I have this reason to betray them because I will get this, and then he doesn't. And then it also doesn't work.
I think it's clever how they did it. But again, a spoiler discussion. But yeah, Capstone is like, I did not like the book with a heavy asterisk on if it was told with like if it was told by someone who was more adept with storytelling instead of Frank Herbert being the idea guy. Mm-hmm. I feel like it would have been a much more sound book. For me, it's like a solid, like, if I had to rate it, it's like a solid 6.5.
Fair enough.
That's fair. I respect that for sure.
See, I liked it a lot, but also with the asterisk that the writing was not as good as it could have been, because there are some parts where like Frank's writing really stands out, but a lot of the times it's just kind of meh.
Yeah.
Like there's not much description at all for most of the parts. And the parts that are really good are more for like, he's good at putting an emotional weight into some of the scenes that need it.
But he's really good at dialogue too.
Yes. Oh yeah. The raw lines of dialogue are amazing. There's things that go so hard.
The fact that Frank wrote something to the effect of, I have gazed into the time nexus and seen your future in this timeline is so hard. Like, who comes up with shit like the time nexus? Frank Herbert does.
I think we can agree that the world building is probably the strongest
part of all of
Dune. Like, transcendentally superior to many other books.
Yes. That have ever come out. The world building is phenomenal. I think the dialogue is phenomenal. I think it's kind of everything else that doesn't pull its weight.
Yeah,
it's the tying together of the elements that becomes a little clunky. I don't know.
The way I see it is like, somebody like Frank Herbert's like, here's this beautiful shoe, fine leather, everything is nice and polished. It's like, you know, it's got a steel toe to it. You know, gotta have a little hit to it. But for the shoelaces, I was thinking like we just take some like really old weather. Actually, let me take the string here and just like rub it on like the table edge here for a little while. Like give me like an hour or so, and then once it's frayed and disgusting, then we can tie up this very nice shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Stylistic choice.
Yeah, it's a stylistic choice. But that is my like. Again, I have to like, because I have to specify, I did not like the book with an asterisk, and I love the movie. I love both of the movies. They're so good.
The movies are amazing.
It sounds like you enjoyed the book, but not the novel. Does that make sense? Like you enjoy a lot of aspects of it to give it a positive opinion, but like actually reading it is the hard part. Because there's some movies like that for me where I like the movie, but I have to watch the movie and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, it's like, I like everything that's like, I like the concept of the book, the politics of it, the concept of it, the central tension of it, of spice. I like I would not say the characters.
I think you mean the spice melange.
I like the central tension of the spice melange. It's delivered in like the most clunkiest package ever. Like they gave it like several layers of bubble wrap, wrapped that into like Costco wrapping paper, which is the cheapest possible wrapping paper known to man.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, let's just throw it in FedEx truck and just like smash it around a bit, you know, drive as aggressively as humanly possible.
So I do have a theory on why the book is the way it is that also expands into why Dune is a trilogy and not just one really long book. I think Frank Herbert just wrote this book for like 6 years and then was really tired of writing it. So he finished his draft where it is now and was like, I am done working on this and I'm releasing it.
I think I agree with that because Brian mentions that his father was kind of absent and Dune kind of really like consumed his life when when Brian was a kid.
Yeah,
it was really interesting to read that part of Brian's afterword where like he noted that his father was very like extroverted and kind when out in public, but as soon as they would get home, man, he would be like locked in his office and need like pure quiet, wouldn't talk to anybody. And it's like, damn, that's like, that's some like obsession right there.
Yeah,
that's a Dune agenda, baby.
Oh, hold on, I just found this part that I think is funny in the afterword. So Brian says the novel was first published in hardcover in 1965 by Chilton Books, best known for their immense auto repair novels. No other publisher would touch the book, in part because of the length of the manuscript. They felt it was far too long at 215,000 words, when most novels of the day were only a quarter to a third of that length. Dune would require immense printing costs and a high hardcover price for the time, in excess of
$5.
Oh.
No science fiction novel had ever commanded a retail price that high.
Oh, $5.
$5.
Damn. $5.
Yeah. Before we go on to the next question, can I speak my perspective of reading this book? Because I think mine's a little funnier.
Sure.
Go ahead. So I'm a 40K fan. And I sent this to Kai, but I didn't explain it, I don't think. Me reading Dune was like, you know that meme where it's like a guy who's only seen Boss Baby watching his second movie?
This is just like Boss Baby.
That was me reading Dune, because I was like, man, the way that this book is like formatted reminds me a lot of like the Caiaphas Kane novels. And I was like, well, it's probably where the Caiaphas Kane novels got it from. Yeah. But there's like oh, like the soldiers and the las guns and the guerrilla warfare. I'm like, this reminds me of 40K. I can't imagine why.
Huh. I want to say as a recommendation that if you are a sci-fi fan of any kind, you need to look at Dune, because this is the Bible. This is the origin of everything that you love about, not everything, but like a good majority of things. You will go back in Dune and be like, oh, that's where they got that from.
Yeah, It is a turning point in sci-fi, but that is jumping ahead to another question if we are going to talk about recommending.
We'll get to that later, yeah. But yeah, I really liked it. I liked I liked the lack of, political mystery, just because the idea of, like, it kind of expanded on the fact that everyone is like doomed by the narrative, not of like chance, but because they just like are making the wrong decisions. Because pretty much everybody makes the wrong decision at any point in the first half of Dune that leads to the big climax at the end of part one, which I find really interesting, just because it's like, you know what they need to do, and they just constantly refuse. Like, the one character who everyone agrees is not the traitor ends up being the traitor, and you know that, but everyone's like, oh, it can't be him, because whatever. And so it brings it into a more like, are they going to figure it out, or are they going to tear each other apart? And I find that really interesting.
That's why I call it a political thriller.
Yeah.
Which is, when I say thriller, I'm using the Alfred Hitchcock term.
I'm using the Michael Jackson term. Thank you very much. But one thing, I just had a train of thought that just left my mind, so I have to rub my temples.
It has left the station.
No, I lost it. I just lost what I was going to say. Fuck.
Sorry.
No, you're good. It's not your fault. I have a bit of, I haven't been sleeping well, so that's part of it. Fuck, what was I gonna say? I really don't remember.
I think you're gonna say on to our next question.
I mean, I guess so, because I don't know. I can't think of what I was gonna say now, so I guess I'm just fucked.
You're allowed to say it whenever you remember it.
Do you guys have a favorite character?
Yeah, the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. His scenes are always the ones that kept my most attention.
You are a Harkonnen stan.
I'm not a Harkonnen stan. I just, all his scenes were just way more interesting than whatever was going on Arrakis.
It's so funny to me every time something happens and he's like, I'm hungry again.
He either says I'm hungry again, or I want to fuck little boys.
I like cold, calculating characters. Mm-hmm. So when he's like, I have all these plans within plans within plans within plans. They're pretty epic. Chungus 100. You know what else is pretty epic? Chungus 100. He slowly turns to the camera. Paul Atreides and his sweet, subtle femboy ass.
Oh, I remember. I remember what I was going to say.
Oh no,
that triggered you.
No, it doesn't. No, it kind of does, but not the supple child body, because that's weird. No, what I was going to say is that, if there's anything that I've learned from Dune, is that people who say that Star Wars prequels are boring because of the politics are wrong. The Star Wars prequels are boring because they're not well written.
True.
Because some of the most interesting parts of Dune come from the politics.
Yeah, I wanted to say, I'm really mad that the movie left out Chome. There's something really funny about, like, these, like, aristocratic, like, space barons talking about their stocks and how much stake they have in the global spice trading company.
I love the scene. There's a scene at the end of the book where Paul is like, you're going to give me what I want, or I'm going to just, like, blow up everything. And then the Chome agents are like, oh, my word, you would not do that. And he's like, dude, I don't care about you.
Yeah, there's something about, like, holding somebody at, like, knife point and being like, not only.
I'm going to crash your Apple stocks if you don't fucking like,
not only am I taking your throne and your daughter, but I'm taking all of the holdings you have in the company. He's like, you can't do that.
This is a whole new level of hostile takeover.
Yeah. The funny thing is, he just goes, he said, I'm going to nuke your stocks, but it's literally.
They're not, like, the higher-ups of Chome. They're, like, not Chudleys, but they're not.
They're like middle managers.
Yeah, and they're, like,
they're white devils.
Which is so funny, because if that were me, I would be like, dude, I don't care.
Let me call my manager, man. I don't care.
Let me call the white devil real quick. Hold on.
But Dune, what makes Dune so interesting is that the politics, like, are believable and well written.
Yeah, because the central tension is literally stated from the beginning, like, spice is what makes the world go around, or I guess the galaxy go around. So all the politics is around spice and also, you know, the throne.
Melange. But,
like, the Baron, all his scenes were just about the politics that I was like kind of interested in, so I tend to lean into it. If I had to choose a second favorite, it's Leto, and it's just because I like cool dads.
I also love how every time Leto's on screen, he's like, guys, I think someone's gonna try to kill me.
Yeah, the traitor's like, what?
No, like every chapter is preluded with, like, on the day that Leto Atreides died, 417 stars went out at once because they were so sad that all they could do was dim themselves in his honor. Words of Mardib, written by Princess Irulan. And then, like Leto, like, shows up in a scene and he's like, I think someone's gonna try to assassinate me.
Also, I really love there's a moment where Jessica, like, looks upon Leto and she's like, damn. And then Leto's like, I remember when I first saw Jessica at the slave auction and I was like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
I love that as a couple. That's so wholesome.
That is my favorite character.
Yeah.
That is fair enough.
Mine is probably see, I'm biased because I think my favorite character is definitely Fade Rautha, but only because of the movie. Because I said this in our group chat, but when I saw that movie, I got out of the theater and I was like, I have to apologize for making fun of Austin Butler for his performance in Elvis for so much. Because him as Fade Rautha is maybe one of the best performances I've ever seen in anything.
Bro locked in.
Bro, literally, I really just didn't understand the game he was playing until now. God!
Literally, I don't know if you know this, but in Dune Part 2, the last Atreides soldier that Fade fights is the movie's stunt coordinator, and the stunt coordinator was like, Austin should have been a stuntman. Like, I was not familiar with his game.
Damn. He could be. The Tom Cruise without the Scientology and all the other stuff.
That's fair.
Maybe.
He could be. No, he was awesome in the movie.
But also, I also just like Fade Rautha in the book, though. He's interesting in the book.
He's a horny little fucker.
He is a horny little fucker, and that's what's funny.
That's like the Harkonnen thing, though, right? Horniness?
Yes. At least he was horny towards, like, people of legal age, unlike a certain Baron.
Yes.
I guess Raban wasn't horny. He was just kind of mad all the time.
Raban was kind of just there for...
What is anger but sexual aggression being misplaced?
That reminds me of... That reminds me of one of my favorite Letterboxd reviews for Dune Part 2. That was like, I'm so glad that funny little box came back, although I think that bald fella stuck his wiener in it.
What's funny, though, is like, I can believe
stick
that
your he cock stuck in the box.
I believe that he stuck his dick in the ganja bar.
Does that mean he's more human than Paul? Maybe.
Why, sticking his dick in the ganja bar? I mean, honestly, unironically, yes.
PSA. PSA, the box is not the ganja bar.
Yeah, the ganja bar is the needle. That is
true. I mean, yeah, I know that, but like... Why would you stick the dick on the needle? They don't really give a name for like the event of of putting your hand in the box for the ganja bar. So it's just part of the ganja bar. I feel like the ganja bar is as much the ritual as it is the needle.
Yes. I could maybe understand.
I don't know. I feel like the box needs to be considered separate from the ganja bar, considering the ganja bar gets used later in the book.
Other favorite characters, because we only got two.
Like Jessica.
You listed three. You listed two. I listed one.
No, I meant there was only two people that gave favorite characters.
Oh,
I gave mine. I really like Jessica. I think she's a super interesting character.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I like her as a person necessarily, but I think that she's interesting because she's kind of like always towing the line between like doing her duty as a Bene Gesserit and then also trying to be like a good mother and a good spouse and whatnot. Yeah. And I think
this is another one for me where the performance in the movie kind of biases my view on the character because, oh my God, Rebecca Ferguson is so hot.
We need to stop going on tangents about this thing so we can get through it because we're almost an hour in and we haven't even gotten to the second question.
I do have a question for you guys. I feel like these first three questions are the longest questions also, so I think it's I don't want to say fine, but I think we'll get through it in the next 15 minutes if we lock in. But did you guys get like a vibe from Paul and Jessica that you didn't like?
No.
Okay.
No, but AO3 begs to differ.
I got a borderline Oedipal vibe between them at certain points, and I didn't like it.
It's horrifying.
I know exactly what you mean. This is what I would consider a strange thing to me because my mom is like way the fuck older than me, but I've seen people where the mom is way younger than some other moms, and so they're closer in generational gaps, so they don't have quite as much disconnect between their behavior.
Maybe I don't even know if it's that. It's just
super close to him.
Yeah,
remember she's also his teacher.
Maybe it's that element of it, but she's just very the level of like obsessiveness she has over Paul in the book, especially. Like
I see what
feels
see,
I feel like that was, felt was weird to me, well, but if, like if intentionally weird.
Better, 68 fan fictions on AO3 do agree with your interpretation of that ickiness.
I'm gonna kill 68 authors today.
I didn't say 68 authors. This is 68 fix. They could be from the same author.
I'm gonna kill a maximum of 68 authors, probably less.
Okay, yes.
Debatably. Not counting other websites. But yeah, that's all I had to say. That's all I wanted to ask, because I got a weird vibe at certain point.
I did not get that vibe. I feel like my experiences are a bit biased because, you know, Jessica kind of reminds me of my own mother, like a little bit. So it's like, I don't know. It makes it interesting for me. So I guess I can't get that weird vibe because of just like my own experiencing own experiences mixing in with
I think this. Yeah, that's fair. All right.
Sergio, Matt, your favorite characters?
You go, Sergio.
So my favorite character is actually Paul. I really enjoy his journey and his like when he finally like locks in, water of life drank, Kwisatz Haderach mode activated. He's just such a fucking badass. I'm just blown away at the balls of this case. Like bro's balls weigh him down as he's walking across the sands of Arrakis.
they'd be slapping on the hide of the worm when he rides it.
And like, do we have a favorite quote section? Do we have a question on that?
No,
I kind of just drop them in normally.
If your favorite quote is from Paul, you can drop it.
Yeah, just
try. Yeah, a couple. Obviously, try your tricks on me, old witch. Where's your Gom Jabbar? Try looking into that place where you dare not look. You'll find me there staring out at you.
I marked that in my book, man.
And then obviously the epic silence. I remember your Gom Jabbar.
Okay, I need to say
mine.
Something funny.
I can kill you with a word.
I need to say something hilarious about the audiobook version. Because I have the context of the movies. Where it's this epic moment, and then in the book, it's just like the audiobook is just silence. It's so fucking funny.
Have you seen the 1984 version?
Yeah, I love the hamminess of the. I had that moment in my head. I was like, dude, we're getting to that moment. We're getting to that moment, and then it's just silence.
I want to give a shout out to the audiobook because you listen to the same one as me. I'm pretty sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, it started off with Audible.
Some of the performances in that audiobook are fucking terrible.
No, I disagree. I think they're great. I love except every single Paul. One of them.
Apparently.
Except for the Count, but the Count just bothered me and how he spoke.
I thought he sounded like Darkseid, and I thought it was cool.
I think you're thinking of the Baron, not the Count.
Oh, I am thinking of the Baron.
Count Fenring.
Yo, yeah. No, the scene with the Reverend Mother, Aaliyah, and Jessica. I remember listening to that on my drive home from work, and I was like, oh my god, this Reverend Mother's voice is fucking terrible.
I think it's fine.
Some of the performances, I was like, wow. I know that this is an audiobook, but geez. I would have rather had some of the scenes just read by the default, like, old man narrator guy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's let Sergio finish, and then I think we got to lock in until the spoiler section.
So yes.
We can talk a lot about spoilers.
So, yeah, my favorite character is Paul. Even though, you know, he's meant to be the awful villain, I would join the jihad and sterilize and raise as many planets in his name as I could.
he's not meant to be the awful villain. He's the protagonist.
He's more like an anti-hero. I don't know.
I would say he's fundamentally a good person. We'll talk about that in the spoiler section.
But if we're also talking about the movie, my favorite character is Stilgar. Because in the movie, he's so funny.
Great in the movie. Mm-hmm, I feel like I like movie Paul better than I like him in the book.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah.
Could also be biased because I really like Timothy Chalamet, but you know that's neither here nor there.
Because I like the movie more than I like the book.
I don't like
I'm also a big fan of Duke Leto because he's Oscar Isaac. I know he's not Oscar Isaac in the book, but the description sounds a lot like Oscar Isaac.
They did a good casting choice for him.
Yeah,
and for a lot of the people actually.
Yeah, but
yeah, the casting was excellent.
That makes sense.
Is that Matt, everyone's favorite, or are we waiting on Matt? Matt, what you got?
I still need to talk about mine. So mine is also Paul. It's also Jessica, and it's also Stilgar. Mostly Paul, though. I felt like the three of them, when they got together in the book, that was like, that's the jam. That's that shit in there. Super minor mention. There's a lot of awkward sex tension between Stilgar and Jessica for like the first...
Yes.
Dude, everyone's horny for Jessica. Everyone wants Jessica.
Like, dude, I do.
But Jessica looks at Stilgar and she's like, you know, you are hot and it'd be super politically advantageous, so don't tempt me. It's really
nothing
anyways,
sexier
Paul's
than
favorite.
Being told that.
Well, I mean, in the movie, she wraps her thighs around his head and he's like, sorry, ma'am, I wasn't familiar with your game.
God, I wish that was me.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm going to go against the grain here. I think Book Paul was very much the superior version of Paul to me. A lot of things in the book I think were better than the book. In the book were better than the movie for me, honestly.
Damn.
But Paul especially. And I'm going to say this specifically because the book much more succinctly and completely describes the terrible purpose that Paul lives with.
Yes.
Every fucking day that he gets on Dune. Like, from the second they step on Dune, Paul feels like something is wrong, and straight through to the end of the book, that never changes.
Yes.
And particularly the change between him and Jessica compared to the movie. Well, I say change. The book's original was better, in my opinion. In the movie, Jessica is much more of a domineering, we're going to do this kind of character, and Paul follows along. In the book, the second that things hit the fan after the first book, Paul is out of control. He is only going along with the flow when he wants to. Mm-hmm. And that is a super interesting character dynamic. And Paul... I feel like Paul wants to go with the flow. He doesn't want to be out of control, but he can't not be out of control because of his visions and his feelings.
I can agree with that, actually.
Smashes you in the head with that. Every single time it smashes Paul in the head with it, I really appreciated that. Because then when the final moment in the book happens, like, Sergio, you think he's... I'm glad that you thought he was, like, a super badass Kvasatz Haderach, but, like, I felt like Paul had died when that happened. I felt like the Paul I knew and loved was gone. He was dead.
I mean, that's what makes him the Messiah, isn't it? I mean, he dies and he dies and he comes back. I mean, I feel like the allegory is pretty pretty succinct.
Yeah.
Yes, in some ways.
Yeah, when he dies from drinking... Wait, maybe I shouldn't spoil this.
Yeah,
but
he drank some Wawa.
When he drinks some Wawa, yes. He's literally like dying and being reborn into this new person who is no longer the person.
Spoiler alert, the main character of the series, which has Messiah in the second book, may be a Jesus
idol. Yeah, no, don't tell me it's true.
Anyways. I think that's all I have to say on that for right now. We'll talk a lot more about it in the spoiler section.
Oh, yeah. Least favorite characters. Mine is probably Thufir. They cut Thufir from part two, and I don't think anything of value was lost.
I can agree with that.
I can agree with that. My least favorite character, and it is very much tied to my least favorite moment, which I won't get into, but I don't like Alia.
I don't think anyone likes Alia, to be fair. She's like, I mean, in the book she's weird.
She is very weird.
She's supposed to be weird.
She wasn't
but...
in the movie.
Yeah, me too.
No, it is purely because of my least favorite moment, which that is a spoiler, so I can't talk about it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Interesting. I think I know which one you might be.
But if I had to pick another character, it's probably Chani, and it's just because she's just kind of there.
Damn,
she's much more interesting in the movie.
She is a whole nothing burger. And the movie was like, what if we actually like gave her like, I don't know, like a patty, and maybe like some cheese and lettuce, maybe butter on the bun, toast it.
You said patty, and I had no idea what you were talking about. And then I remembered you said nothing burger, and I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense."
I had that problem too. I was like,
"Give it what?
A peppermint patty?"
Yeah, yeah. Give it a little bit. Let me cook a burger for Johnny.
Let him cook the burger.
I'm glad you said that because I actually feel the exact inverse. I feel like she doesn't do a whole lot in the movie, but she's incredibly important in the book.
Really?
I think she's important.
That shocks me.
She's important in both. But the role she plays in both are very different, and I think I prefer it in the movie.
Staying power in the book,
but in the book, she has more staying power in the book only because the book is so much longer. Like I said, because they had to cut a lot for.
Yeah, I didn't hold it against the movie.
Yeah,
but anyways, no more. We gotta lock in.
Yeah, lock in. My least favorite character.
Besides, it was Thufir.
Oh yeah, Thufir. Yeah. I did say that. Sorry, my head's still hurt. I'm still tired.
I'm also gonna give it to Thufir.
My least favorite was the still suit guy that they had the really awkward dinner with in the first book.
Fair enough. He's
like,
my still suits will suck your cock really good. It's like, shut up, die.
Damn. My least favorite was Count Fenring, just because of the way that he talks.
That's like fair. I know what you mean. You don't like the way that he talks. I think that he talks normally.
Talks
like a disconnected mic.
As I said with Thufir, Count Fenring was cut from the movie, and I don't think anything of value was lost.
Yeah, I think it was fine. I think it was fine that he's gone in the movie. Same with Thufir. They're nothing burger characters.
Yeah, I don't think that anything was lost. I do wish we saw those things though. They kept the deleted scenes and didn't just like erase them from existence, because I would have at least liked to see like what they were going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Especially because like I feel so bad for those actors.
They were just banished from the movie.
Yeah, imagine if you were in the like the biggest blockbuster of the year and you just weren't in it, and no one will see what you did, and you can't be like, oh, I played Count Fenring. Everyone just kind of has to assume you did.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
That's fair.
And that is kind of sad for those people, but we're better off having them not there. Anyway, okay, what are we doing? Favorite moment? Is that the next question?
Mine is very weird, but I like the way that when Leto goes out to look at the rising sun on Arrakis, I just like how it was described.
Mm. Yeah, sure,
it's like very serene.
Yeah. I can agree.
Yeah.
I think my favorite, which was not my favorite at all in the movie, in the book, it was when Jessica drinks the water of life. That is pretty much the exact moment in the book where everything goes in a horrible direction for everybody, and there is no changing it.
Dude, I wish the performance in the audiobook was better for that scene, because I really liked it, but the performance was bothering me so much.
Ouch.
Oh, my favorite scene? I don't
least know. Favorite scene.
Least favorite or favorite? No, we're favorite.
Least. We're favorite. Sorry, my bad.
Probably. The final scene with the emperor, or the gladiator fight with Vader Alpha.
It was very good in both iterations.
Yes. I like the Emperor. Mm-hmm. The Emperor has my favorite line in the whole book, which I will go into in spoiler talk, because you kind of need the context to know why it's so funny. But yeah, that's it.
Mine's a spoiler, so I can't say mine. So we'll let Sergio go.
My favorite scene is, obviously, I mentioned it, where he tells the Reverend Mother to shut the hell up. Because by that time in both the book and the movie, I was tired of the Bene Gesserit bullshit. So she can go sit in her recliner and never to be seen again. And also the final boss fight of the book, which I have to say, from the book to the 1984 version to the Dune Part 2 version, the Dune Part 2 version is probably one of my favorite like fight scenes in movies, period. And I'm so disappointed that Dune Part 2 is the only one where Paul and Fade Rotha say, "May thy knife chip and shatter," to each other, because it's such a hard quote. Mm-hmm. And only Paul says it to Fade in the book, and in the 1984 version, fucking Paul says it. Also, the fight sucks in the 1984 version. I'll say it.
But it's got Sting. It's got Sting in it, and he's in a cod piece.
Sting is no Austin Butler.
I know. No, I agree.
Also, I like that they chatted up Fade for the movie, and that he doesn't cheat in his final battle because he just has too much sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
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 Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Least favorite moment.
Spoiler, I can't say it.
Let's see here. I would say I'm just gonna go with the dinner scene again. Even though there's fun stuff in the dinner scene, it's just like it's such a goofy fucking writing style for that one dinner scene.
Yeah,
and it goes on for so long too.
I agree with that.
It's a little bit too much praise for Paul politically when he like is just telling people they're stupid.
Yeah,
for the next 40 minutes.
I think mine is either that one, or there's a scene with Count Fenring at the end of the book that just doesn't need to happen, and doesn't happen in the movie, obviously.
Yes.
Like, after all the major stuff happens, the Emperor's like, Count Fenring, will you do this thing for me? And Count Fenring's like,
no.
Count Fenring really just didn't need to be there. He doesn't add anything to the book, I think.
He just subtracts. He only subtracts.
I don't think he subtracts, but I think him not adding or subtracting anything makes him subtract from stuff. It's just genuinely a pointless, like, it just doesn't, I can't even put it in words.
He is a null variable.
Yes.
He doesn't add anything, he doesn't subtract anything, but his mere existence there reduces the, like, the whole equation to just being sort of like a confusing statement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sergio, what's your least favorite scene? Did you say it?
No, I did not. My least favorite scene, I think I would probably also go from the dinner scene. I enjoyed this thing through and through. I didn't really have any, like, place where I just kind of was falling off.
Yeah, I didn't fall off at any point. There was just scenes that I liked more than others.
I can agree with that as well.
I can accept your viewpoint, but I can disagree.
Mm-hmm. Did you say yours?
Equinox. I can't because it's a spoiler.
Oh, that's right.
It's a spoiler.
All right. Important themes.
Would that be a spoiler? I feel like those would be spoilers.
The themes? There's a couple.
We can't talk about all the details of the themes, but I feel like we can mention.
I would say, imperialism is bad.
Is a pretty easy.
Colonialism is bad. Colonization.
Too.
Native
four.
Fate and destiny is something absolutely. And prophecy is something that's highly critiqued in this book. I mean, even just like because we talked about, you know, the fact that the plot. The traitor is spoiled to us. We too are locked in to the threads of fate and are powerless to stop it. Which is kind of something that they go into with, Paul's powers and himself.
I agree, but I don't know if I agree, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there's also a theme.
Without going into spoilers, I think fate and destiny and stuff are an important theme, but not for the reason you said. But if I say the reason why, it would be a spoiler.
I think there's also just like a general theme of like critique of organizations, just period. Yes. Whether they be shadow organizations or be
of organization. Yeah,
just like I guess power in general is sort of like a theme there too.
Yes.
Political power, personal power, military power, you know?
Desert power.
I'm gonna go for the unsung one, but the one that's absolutely ubiquitous throughout the book. Ecology is a massive theme for a lot of the Fremen, because unlike in the movie, it's a super constant reminder that the Fremen broadly would like to terraform the entirety of Arrakis to becoming very different.
I'm glad somebody mentioned that one, because I was going to bring it up later.
It's a good theme. It's a good theme that comes up, because that's sort of what the Fremen want. That's their whole goal in the long run. I feel like in the movie they got a little bit overshadowed into like just a religious jihad group, but in the book they're very much doing this for their own ends as well, and that's why that they like Paul so much. So
yeah, because as the Lisan al Gaib, he promises Lisan al Gaib to like. You know, make the world green and full of water and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very exactly. Which ties in very well to Kine's character. I felt like that was very... He was a much more important character in the book than I thought.
Yes.
Oh. And the last thing I'll ask of you guys, do you think Kine's was a self-insert of Frank Herbert in looking back on it?
I can see it to some degree.
Maybe a little bit.
But I think all characters are... reflections of the author in some way, shape, or form,
perhaps,
or whether it be very, very minor or a lot larger as a self insert. I like the author's life is going to be influenced into the characters and who they are.
That is fair.
Is that everybody? Who has?
I have one. I have one.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, actually, it's two, but they're kind of the same thing. So there's a line that keeps cropping up that, like, the person who has the true power over something is the person who's able to destroy it. And then also, like, the theme of, like, scarcity coming up again, because there's a scarcity of water, and spice melange is so, I guess, so sought after because it's a very scarce, limited resource on this planet, and, like, nobody really knows, like, how it, you know, is made and whatnot. They just know where to collect it, and I think it's an interesting connection to, like, the power of ecology, because oftentimes the factor that's limited is the one that, like, sets the tone for how the rest of the system is going to function. So it's interesting that the entire book kind of, like, surrounds this idea, because it is one of the main facets when you learn ecology.
Yes, I agree. It was a good part of the book.
Yes. I appreciated it. I appreciated all that stuff.
Yeah, Frank was really big into ecology. Brian even says that his father was like an ecological hero, which I don't disagree with, because I know he did a lot of environmentalism in his life. I'm doing a lot more compliments to Brian than I was expecting. I'll get to it in the spoiler talk.
Uh-huh.
I have some grievances. also I'll just say this one last thing, because I just found on it, according to Brian, Mentats are the precursors of Spock. I don't know, I'm a little wishy-washy on that. He also does mention that you know, for his time, Frank does warn about the danger of thinking machines, and obviously Frank,
yes.
Brian compares it to the Terminator movies, which obviously came like 20 years afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I do, however, fundamentally disagree with Brian saying that Dune says that the thinking machines cruelly enslaved humans, which I didn't get from reading the book, but if you read Brian's books, he definitely went with that angle.
That seems like more of Brian's viewpoint.
That's definitely
Brian's what viewpoint. Happened.
Yeah. We'll talk about the spoiler section.
Well, I think we've got a lot that we want to say in the spoiler section, so shall we just go ahead and hop on into that?
Yes.
Well, we have one more question.
Do you recommend the book? I say I recommend the book, but if you can't get into the book, then watch the movies, because the movies are fucking phenomenal.
My response is, if you really enjoy sci-fi, sure. If you care about classic and influential works, sure. But if either of those aren't something that, like, you define yourself as, like, if you can't get past the prose of this book, then just watch the movies. Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2 are like a streamlined, modern take on the storytelling of Dune, while keeping most of the bits and pieces. Like, to me, Dune the movie is like the theatrical release, whereas Dune the book is the director's cut version.
Yeah, I said that to my little brother, that I was like, the best I can describe Dune is this Dune extended cut. Did you like the movie? Do you wish Dune had more things in it than the book is right for you? I think also your mileage will vary if you actually sit down and read the thing or listen to the audiobook, because as someone who just doesn't enjoy audiobook, I cannot imagine sitting down and listening to this for 24 hours. When I could just
21. You do other things. You put it on in the background while clean or walk or something.
I just can't focus on them. And like, when I see the length, I'm like, I can just put this in my hands and finish it in a few hours. Like,
yes. It is a lot faster when you read it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
You can also turn up the speed, though. I listen to audiobooks, all of them, at like 2x speed. So, you know,
you're wild for that.
I also just can't do that. Like, I don't know.
I just like listening to somebody else read it to me. And most of the time, because of the because of how I work and like my job, I can work with an audiobook.
Mm-hmm. I have a long-ass commute. Commute. Why did I say it like that? Commute. I have a long ass commute, so yeah.
I listen to it a lot while I'm at work, because I have a long period of time where I just watch things, so it's fine to listen to stuff. But I prefer to like to read books like this where they're really good for the imagination, because my imagination works a lot better when I read the written word rather than listening to it.
I think if you like Warhammer especially, you owe it to yourself to go read this, because this is just the prequel to Warhammer, basically. If you like sci-fi, of course you need to read this. If you like fantasy as well, I think that you should read this, especially if you like darker Chosen One plot lines. This is like the quintessential dark, twisted Chosen One plot line.
Yeah, I told Matt, because this book did remind me of The Wheel of Time more than it reminded me of Lord of the... Like, The Wheel of Time reminded me of Lord of the Rings.
I mean, Wheel of Time takes a lot from Dune.
Hey, that's what I said in The Wheel of Time. That's why I was like, hey, I don't get it. Yep. Why people say it's a Lord of the Rings clone. This is a Dune clone. And now since reading Dune, I understand.
No, it's pretty definitive. Especially, like, the terrible purpose definitely comes through a little bit in parts of Wheel of Time. Much more than like a good Chosen One
does. I mean, the Aes Sedai and the Bene Gesserit are just the same thing.
They sound exactly the same. Like, the words have the same ring to them.
In a similar way, yeah. And finally, this is a really out of left field one. If you like Dances with Wolves,
you will
also probably enjoy a significant part of the second half of Dune.
Is that an anime?
Oh, you guys don't know?
No, I've never heard of this thing in my life.
That is the story of the cowboy who goes out.
That's a Kevin Costner and, movie.
It's the story where he goes out into the frontier to see it before it dies, and he winds up becoming very intertwined with Native American culture and winds up essentially becoming one of them, in opposition to the American forces nearby. It's a very interesting story, but you'll feel a lot of Dune's influence over it, because that came out 20 years after Dune.
Okay.
Came out.
Interesting.
Apparently, it was converted into a book at the request of Kevin Costner, who also turned it into a movie.
Interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a good story.
I assumed it was an anime because you were recommending it. I was like, oh,
man. I said, is it an anime? I didn't say that's an anime.
That is wild that you said that.
Yeah, this is a recommendation.
Well, he recommends a lot of anime, so it makes sense. I would say, you know what? Kind of along those lines, if you like Westerns, you might like Dune, because it's actually a bit similar in a lot of ways.
Maybe a bit.
It definitely has that frontier thing.
If you like Dune, have you considered Blood Meridian?